time now to talk some footy, and we've got John Pirrick on the line from The Age. Very good colleague of mine is John, and he's been filing a million stories as usual over the weekend, and he snuck out to Punt Road yesterday where the Tigers were doing battle in an intra-club game. G'day, JP.
Good afternoon, Ron.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
And no doubt you've been getting you're still doing plenty of cricket, plenty of footy too. What did you make of the Tigers yesterday in their hit-out?
Oh, it's a bit hard at times, isn't it, to fully assess teams when they're only playing against each other. And you can see some of the top players. Now, they're not necessarily going at 100%, are they? Some of the younger players keen to make a mark are really sort of burrowing in. And for some of the top players, it's sort of more of a glorified training session. In saying that, there were about 1,500 fans yesterday, and they would have left pretty happy, I would have thought, particularly with three of their recruits, Dion Prestia, Josh Caddy, and the big ruckman, Toby Nankervis. Prestia looked good across half-back and through the midfield. Caddy as well was strong through the midfield, and he's just going to add that sort of bull type of body that the Tigers desperately needed in there to sort of help some of their other players. And Nankervis as well, who's already become a favourite of coach Damien Hardwick. Tigers are looking forward to him to have a real physical presence around the ground. And each of those guys played well, and will give the Tigers something certainly to cheer for this season.
One thing that interested me, obviously Caddy and Prestia, you know, a huge plank of their hopes for this year, and they were both impressive. I would have thought that would have allowed a Dustin Martin to do a fair bit more damage forward of centre, and yet I saw in your story Kane Lambert talking about Dusty and saying that how they were really big on getting him to improve his defensive side of his game. So, you know, how actually are they going to use Martin this year?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Until Damien Hardwick, I guess, clarifies that, it's sort of a bit unknown at the moment. Dusty sort of pushed forward a lot yesterday. His kicking was great as usual, and he was kicking it long. He had an interesting year last year, didn't he? Like, he was obviously claimed his first best and fairest, average almost 32 touches a game and 13 contested. But less than 10% of his disposals were inside 50, which is the first time since his debut season that he accrued less possessions inside 50 than that. So the Tigers were criticised a bit for that, weren't they, in terms of the way they used him. But they sort of needed his ball work across half-back to sort of rebound, because that was one of their big issues as well. So you think for Dustin to sort of have as much impact as he possibly can have, and for the Tigers, he'd be best if he pushed forward. So, but as I say, until the sort of Tigers clarify that, it remains one of the unknowns.
Nankervis, an interesting one too. I mean, Sean Hampson, pretty good season for them last year. Ivan Marich previously, sort of he got squeezed out by Hampson's reasonable form. And both Marich and Hampson haven't really fitted the bill as key forwards. So
No. Is
it going to be one of the three? Can you see any way they're going to carry any more than one of those three in the side?
Yeah, it's hard to carry two sort of specialist ruckmen with neither that effective up forward anymore, isn't it, Rowan? Like, Hampson yesterday was actually running the boundary. So that's where he was at with things. Marich was out there as well, but he's sort of transitioning more into the coaching phase of his career. Don't see him playing too many games this season unless there are injuries. And Nankervis, as we know, was an emergency in last year's grand final for the Swans. And just from talking to a few Tigers officials yesterday, they've been really impressed with his pre-season. And he's sort of got that number one role wrapped up at this stage, unless there's sort of unforeseen circumstances. So he'll be the number one. They'll get some backup around the ground, maybe a bit from Griffiths up forward, and whoever else can sort of pinch hit in the ruck. But it's just hard to carry two specialist ruckmen. And as you say about Hampson, that was his issue at Carlton as well. They just couldn't quite work out whether he was going to be a frontline ruckman or a key forward. And it's been the same at Richmond as well. So he'll play some games, but I don't expect him to have too much of an impact this season.
I really want to see the Tigers sort of strike out a bit more in terms of offense, much as I hate using that Americanism. You know, I think they played their best footy back in about 2013, but yeah. I keep hearing, you know, Kane Lambert's comments. I saw some comments from Dimmer the other day about defense. They still seem pretty preoccupied with it, I reckon. Did you get that impression watching them yesterday?
Yeah, that's exactly what you said about Lambert as well when we spoke to him. He sort of kept preaching defense. They need to kick some goals. They only averaged about 78 points last season, which is 15th in the league, and their lowest actually since 2004. I think the stats show that after about round eight, they sort of slowed their ball use down from half back because they were coughing it up so much. And while that stopped transition goals from the opposition, it made them harder to score up forward themselves. So, and as a consequence of that, like Jack Revolt had contributed his least goals, I think, since 2009. He had 48 for the season. So they spoke yesterday as well about moving the ball quicker, but sort of until we see it against real opposition teams, it's sort of hard to know just how much they're going to change that or if change it at all.
Good stuff, JP. Pretty comprehensive wrap-up of how the Tigers performed at Punt Road yesterday. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ron.
John Pirrick from The Age there filling us in on Richmond's intra-club game yesterday. And we've got a full wrap of the intra-club games. Next cab off the rank, it's Ben Guthrie from afl.com.au who's going to talk to us about the Melbourne intra-club game. G'day, Ben.
G'day, Rowan. How are you, mate?
Very well, very well. Now, I will grill you about your brother and Geelong and how they're going in a sec, but first things first, what'd you make of the Demons?
Yeah, they were pretty impressive, I thought, on the other night. I think Angus Brayshaw was probably the standout for mine. He had those concussion issues last year and only played the 10 games, but he looks fit and ready to go in our season 2017. He only played the second half of the game, but he had a calf injury that he's sort of slowly coming back from in Maroochydore, but it was just his ability to hit the scoreboard and really find space up forward that really impressed me. I thought Jaden Hunt as well. He had a sensational year last year.
He's a gun, Ben. I love him.
He is. He was judged Melbourne's best young player by the coaches, even though he didn't receive a NAB Rising Star Award last year. But it's just his mix of competitiveness and raw speed that really, really stands out. And he's definitely one of my favourites to watch in the competition. And as you said, I think he's probably one of yours as well, Ron.
You mentioned the midfield. I reckon most conjecture probably about, you know, how far their midfield can go. And I don't think it was very highly rated by the statisticians, which surprised me a bit. I reckon you stick in a guy like Jordan Lewis, you've got Brayshaw coming back, you've got Jake Melksham finally getting to play for him after a year on the books. I reckon they've got a fair bit of depth now, haven't they?
Yeah, I think so. I was very surprised by that champion data ranking. I think they were ranked last field in the competition. But it's just their depth, as you mentioned, even Clayton Oliver, who is having a very good preseason. I spoke to Aaron Vandenberg the other day, and he reckons that Oliver's really flying on the track and ready to take it up to the next level. And it was Jordan Lewis the other night. He doesn't get like heaps of the footy, and he's probably just going through the motions in those sort of intra-club games. But it's just his ball use, particularly out of defensive 50, that was the most impressive thing. And at least three of his kicks out of defensive 50 led to scoring shots at the other end of the ground. So I think it's just going to be his direction and his ability to direct his teammates out on the field that'll really pay off for the Demons.
Jack Viney, of course, probably a linchpin of that midfield, along with Jordan Lewis, obviously, coming in. Big moment for him during the week, named as co-captain. Did he carry himself in a more captain-like manner, do you think?
I think he always does, Rowan.
Yeah, that's true.
That's his go. And there was a passage of play out on the wing where he fumbled the ball, which is very uncharacteristic of him, but as is his go, he went straight back in and won the footy and dished it out to a teammate. So I think that dynamic between Jones and Viney will work pretty well. Jones is obviously the existing captain, and he's taken really strong strides in his leadership over the last couple of years. And Paul Roos has pointed that out when he was at the club. But I think Jack Viney is almost ready to go. He's Melbourne through and through, and I think that'll be a really interesting dynamic to track throughout the year.
Very quick one. How's your brother going down at the Cattery?
Both brothers now actually are on. So,
I forgot that. Sorry.
So Zach got rookie listed last year, but yeah, they're both tracking pretty well. They're injury free at the moment, which is what you want, especially when the games are coming up. So
it wasn't Cam giving Paddy Dangerfield the cork, was it? So he could get some more time.
No, that was Nikolai Kefisu. Actually, it was it was actually amazing. They got through their 2 20-minute halves in the intra club game, and then it was just a late drill that they were doing, a contested drill, and Dangerfield went to the ball, and Cockatoo tackled him and sort of fell across his leg, and it was amazing. I just saw Geelong's premiership chances falling through their fingers when he stayed down for a couple of seconds, but thankfully he got up and helped off by the medical staff, and it looked a little bit sort of dangerous there for a while, but the club confirmed that it was only a corky, so it was a massive sigh of relief. And yeah, I saw Steve Hocking on the sidelines, the Geelong footy manager, and he was definitely pleased with what had occurred, and it could have been far worse. So I think yeah, the Cats are pretty pleased with how things turned out there.
Good stuff, mate. Thanks for joining us.
No problems at all, Ron. Cheers.
That's Ben Guthrie from AFL.com.au updating us on the Melbourne intra-club game and a little bit on Geelong with his two brothers now among the ranks of senior players at Geelong. Time to move now to Sydney. And boy, they've been baking up in Sydney. Some fierce heat going on. I think the Swans were locking horns with each other out in the west where it was hottest of all. We've got Adam Curley on the line to join us from AFL.com.au. G'day, Adam.
Afternoon, Rowan. Thanks for having me.
How are you surviving with the heat up there, mate?
Just.
Yeah?
Mate, yeah, it was 40 degrees when the Swans kicked off Friday. And yesterday out in the west, it was about 47 or something, they said it felt like, and about 50 degrees where it was all concreted. So, yep, hopefully we get some relief today.
So did they actually talk about scrapping that game? Because I would have thought, you know, 40-plus degrees, there's some real sort of health and safety issues going on.
Yeah, well, I was hoping for it to be scrapped, being, sitting in the grandstand and sweating like a pig. But, no, they managed it pretty well. They had plenty of water and those spray machines and ice jackets and all that. And they only played 4 by 20. I reckon they would have cut some of those quarters a bit short. And they had plenty of academy kids too helping out. So they were pretty smart with it. And these players are pretty fit, so they would have prepared for it pretty well.
I had a read of your match report. I suppose probably the most significant thing looking ahead to this season would have been the performance of Sam Reed, a real forgotten man almost of the Sydney lineup, but he showed what he can do up forward.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess some people, as everyone does, we forget people that aren't playing these days. We forget how good a player he was and how handy he would have been in the finals last year. And you got to remember, they missed him in the finals the year before as well. But I think the best thing about it was he got through. Last year was the game, the same ground, same fixture. He had a little bit of a twinge in a hammy, and that was basically the end of his season. Once he got back from that, the calf trouble started, then the Achilles got on top of him. But he moved really well up the ground, dropped a few easy marks, but I guess the touch will come. But probably could have had 5 goals in the first quarter. He was playing on Michael Talia, who's no slouch, and obviously looking to get back on board in his own sort of way. But yeah, just to get through, John Longmire was wrapped.
Well, I was going to say, Talia, another forgotten man, really, and he's had sort of issues with injury and issues off the field as well. But if he comes back and sort of holds a key defensive spot, can we lock Reed in now as a forward? And if so, how's that going to fit in alongside Buddy Franklin and Kurt Tippett? Because that partnership has had its issues at times as well.
Yeah, I don't think there's any worries about Sam Reed playing forward. I think John Longmire realised the year before last that he's definitely the best asset as a leading up forward, just because he can lead up. He's got a good tank. So he gets out of that space for Franklin and Tippett and Heaney and these sorts of guys. So Talia, on the other hand, I'm not too sure if he's going to get back in anytime soon. I think he's got a lot of yards to make up after last year. I think they'll go with Grundy and Alier and probably Jeremy Laidler maybe if he gets back from that elbow. But Talia is a very, I guess, solid backman, but I don't think there's any doubt Sam Reed will be playing forward. It's just, and I guess the other thing about him getting on the park now is that him and Franklin, once he starts playing, and Tippett can start to work together and get that relationship back.
There's always a tough business coming off a grand final defeat, particularly one like last year. I mean, the Swans, however you dress it up, you know, the fact is they were within a kick of the lead pretty late in the last quarter. So, you know, I look at their season, it was very impressive. Hard to identify where they actually need to improve. Now, you watch them very closely. Can you identify a specific area they could get better in?
I definitely need some speed. I guess that one told pretty well in the grand final with Johannesson and these sorts of guys carving him up a bit. But I guess when you look at the grand final, Franklin and Parker were a bit underdone, but I guess the Dogs were the same. But I think outside speed's where they're going to get a real lift this year. I mean, Zach Jones played in the midfield on Friday night and tore it up, and his speed and running carry's great. Isaac Heaney's going to be in the midfield now. They've lost Mitchell, who lacked a bit of leg speed. They got Oliver Florent, who's their top draft pick. He's really quick. So I think the Swans identified some outside speed because they got the guys like Kennedy, Parker, Dan Hannanbury, Kieran Jack. They're stars. They just need a bit of outside run. So I think that's where Zach Jones and Heaney and these guys will come in this year.
That's a really good point because, you know, Mitchell outwardly, you look at his numbers and you think, well, gee, that is a big loss. But it actually gives them a chance for a better balanced midfield, but like you say, with the addition of some pace. And both Jones, Heaney, we know what he can do, but Jones, a couple of times late in the piece, really impressive, I thought, coming off half back. So they can sort of change the makeup of that midfield a bit as well.
Yeah, and I guess once you... Well, I guess when John Longmire sees Parker and Kennedy, Hannanbury, these guys there, he knows what they're going to give, and the other teams do as well. I guess once you throw Jones in there, throw Heaney in there, Mills played on the wing and on the ball a bit Friday night, I guess other teams are going to have to... They're going to get some new looks, and I guess the young guys really playing together. Zach Jones on Friday night was really impressive the way he grabbed it, and he just put it under his arm, took him on, and I spoke to him after the game, and he said, John Longmire, that's he's given him the licence. If he gets caught every now and then, we've seen it around the league, other players do it, but I think he can run and carry, break the lines open, and give him some different looks and get it into that forward 50 quickly. And you got Franklin Tippett, Reed up there all firing, Heaney if he's down there. That's a pretty dangerous forward line.
No, I agree. I think it'd be a very brave person who thinks they're going to fall away any after a disappointing grand final loss. Thanks for joining us, Adam, and go and stick yourself in front of the air conditioning.
No worries, will do. Thanks, Ryan.
Adam Curley from AFL.com.au joining us to talk about the Swans. And we go from Sydney up to Queensland. I'm not sure what the temperature's been like there the last couple of days, but Michael Whiting from AFL.com.au, been a busy boy. He had a look at the Brisbane Lions intra-club game and the Gold Coast Suns intra-club game. How are you, Fish?
Yeah, good, right. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very well. How is the weather up there?
Very warm. I think we're at about 37 or 38 at the moment. It's been indicative of the whole summer, actually. We've barely had a cool day.
And don't tell me, I bet you went for a 10K run or something first thing this morning anyway, right?
I went a little bit further, actually. Oh, but, I had to get up very early to do so because the sun's up early and the heat's up early too.
Well, very dedicated. We'll start with Brisbane. Now, I think it's fair to say not too many people expecting too much from them this year, even with Chris Fagan obviously landing as a new coach. But I would have thought one really significant thing out of their intra-club hit-out was Josh Sakei up forward.
Yeah, he was really impressive. In all fairness, it was hard to get a gauge because Chris Fagan decided to basically put what he thinks at the moment is his best team. He wants to see them play together and get some synergy and continuity as much as he can. So he pretty much picked his best team against everyone else. So Josh Sakei's obviously in the best forward line at the Lions at the moment. So he had guys like Matt Hamelman, who's a similar size to him, Liam Dawson and a few young guys sort of rotating through him. But he is a lot stronger, as you'd expect, in his second year. He's very fit. He took some overhead marks. He kicked well from outside 50. You couldn't ask for much more, you know, despite probably some sort of second-string defenders. But he looks great at the start of his second season.
What about the other end of the ground? They've been pretty vulnerable defensively in the key posts. Who played there and how do they look?
Yeah, so they brought Jack Frost in from Collingwood, who's pretty much taking over from Dan Merritt, who retired in the last year. So they've slotted him into fullback, and they played Harris Andrews down there. He's come into his third year. He's probably had one of the best pre-seasons at the club. I don't think you'd like to play him as a second key tall, ideally, because his best attribute's probably the intercept marking and the way he reads the play. But so Frost, Andrews and Darcy Gardner are probably the three keys locked in at the moment down that defensive end.
Just quickly, Dane Beams and Alan Christensen, both obviously key parts of the equation, long-term injuries. How's their recuperation going and what can we expect from either of them this season?
Yeah, Dane Beams is just like the knee problem, which pretty much ruined most of last year for him. It's probably taken a little bit longer than they thought. He's running a stack at training, so he's super, super fit, but he's just had a... I guess he's not getting out of that final hurdle as quick as he'd like, but he's not far away. They're expecting him to play during the pre-season, so there's not a major concern over him. They'd like him to be a little more advanced, though. should see him for most of the season. Alan Christensen's fine. He, of course, dislocated his collarbone in the middle of last year. That sort of wiped out the second half of his season. But he just went in to have a plate removed from that collarbone a couple of weeks ago. So he missed a week or two's training. He just needs to get a bit more running into his legs. And he should be fine in a couple of weeks. So, everything going well between now and round one, those guys should be available. You should see him for most of the season.
Well, let's head down the highway to Gold Coast. And like Brisbane with Shacky, I would have thought the best sign out of their hit out was the former David Swallow.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just good to see him back out there playing. I think people quickly forget how good this guy is. He was a number one pick, and he was in 2014 when the Suns were a Gary Ablett injury away from making the finals. He was their best and fairest.
Yeah.
And since then, he's played six games with just a recurring knee problem. Didn't play one at all last year. So it's just great to see him out there. He played four quarters. Rodney's keeping him out of the midfield as much as he can. Like, he's kept him on the wing at half back with little spurts in the midfield yesterday. So I think you'll see a bit more of that through the pre-season. And even once the season starts, I don't think they're going to want to play him four quarters in the middle. So he just can't help himself, Dave Swallow. He's a really, very combative guy, and they're going to want to keep him out of the heat probably early in the season. But just great to see him get through and no problems for him. So he's almost bit of a cliche. He's almost like a new recruit for them. They haven't had him for 2 years, and they'll get to throw him into the mix again this year.
And they'll never need him more than this year, obviously, with O'Meara and Prestia out of the equation. Barlow and Jared Lyons coming in now. Am I right in saying neither of them played yesterday?
Barlow didn't play. He had a wedding, so the club granted him the leave for that, but he's fine. And Jared Lyons played half yesterday, and he just picked up a bit of a niggle. So Rodney Eade was saying after the match it was like on the outside of his Achilles, and that was very, very precautionary. So they sort of expect him to, well, if he doesn't play JLT1, he'll play the following week. So he comes in, Barlow's in, Pierce Hanley, of course, has come to the club, and he looked really good yesterday as well. So with those three guys and Dave Swallow coming back almost as a new player, they've got very good cover in that midfield. Despite the loss of Prestia and O'Meara, they've actually got a bit more depth. Whether they've got the class and the talent, I guess we'll see in the as the season unfolds.
And just a quick one on the injury front. I saw Trent McKenzie came off with a Baker's cyst. Now, what the hell was that?
It's basically a problem behind his knee. So they thought it was a calf.
Yeah.
And it's some little, mate, it's a fancy term for a problem behind your knee at the top of your calf. So it's not serious, though, but they, that's going to be a week at most, if that's what it is. And that's what they suspected it was yesterday. So it's like the top of your calf behind your knee, basically. So it's nothing to worry about.
I thought he'd been doing one of those bread-making courses and just gone a bit too hard or something.
No, it's nothing to be too worried about, though. So Trent McKenzie's probably in a funny spot, actually, sort of on the fringe of the team for so long. In those first few years, he was sort of an automatic selection, but he's on the fringe and he probably doesn't need any hiccups at the moment.
Good stuff, Fish. Updating us on both Brisbane and the Gold Coast. Love your work. Go and have another run.
Thanks, Ro. Will do.
We're going around the grounds doing a full wrap of all the AFL intra-club games that took place both Friday night and yesterday, 7 in total. And North Melbourne were one of those sides, and they've had some fairly feisty little hit-outs so far. And joining us to talk about their one this weekend is Ben Waterworth from foxfooty.com.au. G'day, Ben.
G'day, Rowan. It was it certainly kept onlookers very interested on Friday, to say the least.
Well, they've been on the angry pills or something over the summer, because they had a hit-out, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and Andrew Swallow had a dust-up with Luke McDonald, and he got involved in another one the other night as well.
Yeah, Luke McDonald, I don't know what it is. He certainly might be taking a few of those pills because on January 20, as you said, he had that dust-up. And then he had another one with Lindsay Thomas on early in that intra-club game, the CB Country game, and there was certainly plenty of feist in it. Luke McDonald went for the late spoil on Thomas and probably just got him a little bit high, and Lindsay certainly didn't like it. Almost seemed like he threw a bit of a jumper punch at that stage. Unfortunately, Lindsay couldn't convert his set shot for goal from 30 metres out either, so that was a bit disappointing. But then I suppose the major one after that, Ryan, was about a minute or two later, Braden Pruce, the backup ruckman, and he was the number one ruckman for the game because Todd Goldstein, Ben Brown, Majak Dawe, all out with injury at the moment.
Mm.
So he won that hit out and then laid a big tackle on Andrew Swallow, a bit of a steer tackle, and Swallow sort of landed head first. And the former North skipper, I don't think, was very pleased at all with that treatment. He certainly let Bruce know about it. A bit of a wrestling match after that tackle. And then Swallow, in his press conference afterwards, said that he was pretty keen to let Bruce know that he wasn't happy with the tackle. But I suppose they all came together at the end, and Swallow acknowledged that it was a poor technique from Bruce in the end. But certainly very, very hot early in that game with, I think, some tempers were flaring, no doubt.
Interesting case with Swallow, because I think having relinquished the captaincy, it's almost as if, you know, I don't want to speak on his behalf, but it's almost as if he's gone, well, you know, I've still got to show that I'm a leader and respected, and just because I don't have a C next to my name doesn't mean I can't be setting the tone.
And I talked to Nick Del Santo a couple of months ago, actually last month, about this role, and then Nick said that Andrew's the kind of guy that's not going to necessarily relinquish a leadership role and step back straight away. He's going to be right in amongst it, and that was certainly the case, I think, on Friday, not just with standing up and flying the flag after that tackle. But he was actually, I think, in the first half, close to the best player on the ground. His work around the clearances and the stoppages was just second to none. I think his kicking was pretty impressive. He's not necessarily known as the best kick in the league, but I thought his delivery inside 50 was pretty good. So he certainly stood up, certainly from a playing by examples perspective as well. So Andrew Swallow, hopefully, looking for a big year in 2017.
Who else did you like the look of?
I liked the look of Mason Wood a lot. Now, Mason, obviously, his year last year was cut short by a knee injury, but in his sort of 8 games that he played beforehand, he was impressive in just about every one of them as well. And now that he's got a relatively full preseason under his belt, he is looming as one of the big breakout players, I think, in the league this year. His work below his knees, he's a great mark and he's a beautiful set shot for goal. But what impressed me, he's about 193 centimetres, was his ability to pick up the ball below his knees was just outstanding, I thought, on Friday. Did it, I reckon, 4-5 times, very, very clean below his knees. Kicked 2 or 3 goals, probably had about 2 or 3 behinds as well. But Mason Wood, for mine, looms as a real breakout player, a real barometer, I think, for North Melbourne. If he's up and about, I think the Roos can certainly win more games than what most people give them credit for. But him and Jared Waite, I thought, worked quite well together. They were in the same team, in the country team, playing in the red jumpers. So those two worked quite well, and Mason Wood really stood out for mine.
Yeah, we spoke to him on Mornings a few weeks back, and there's a bit of a buzz around him. It's like the penny dropped for him, I think, in that little spell last year before he got injured. But he's got a touch of the Jack Gunsons about him, I reckon. Mm. Just that, you know, mid-size forward, good at ground level, good on the lead, good in the air. And they're sort of the key forwards of the next generation almost.
Absolutely. I think Gunson's almost a really good comparison to make because he can do it all. And that's, I suppose, what's expected of that modern-day mid-sized forward who's sort of early 190-centimetre range. He's got a great frame, a great tank. What also impressed me was that he did work up the ground quite a fair bit, particularly when the ball was up in his team's defensive half. He was working pretty hard there. And then when his team was able to get on the end of a chain, he was sprinting really, really hard towards the goal square, almost not quite Pagan's Paddock style, but was certainly working hard back into his forward 50. So he's fit, he's clean at ground level, he's certainly on song when it comes to kicking for goal as well. So certainly looms as a really important player for the Kangaroos this year.
Great stuff, Ben. Thanks for the wrap-up.
Good on you, Rowan.
Ben Waterworth from foxfooty.com.au talking about the Roos, the angry Roos, it seems, so far this pre-season, as they will try to hang on to a spot in the eight, which I think a lot of people seem to think is pretty precarious heading into the new season.